Hey, y'all. Welcome to Winning at Life. Live Financial News Talk Radio. We do this for you weeknights at 7. It's a show about money. Best thing about the show is we'll talk with you. If you have a financial situation, not sure what to do, give us a call, 504-260-0995. You can reach out to us through the Winning at Life app. You know, I was looking back on Saturday's show. We do that from 10 to 1 on Saturdays. Man, did we get a lot of downloads. No questions through the app, but we got a lot of downloads. People connecting, becoming a part of the Winning at Life Nation. So I was really excited about that. But that's not unusual, but it just seemed like to be more of a spurt all of a sudden. It was download after download after download. Now, on the app, you can text, email, call the show through the app. We'll send you an email every week, kind of updating news. There's information about the Wednesday Q&A. You can connect to the Ask Gregory podcast through the app. Also, once again, you could stream audio. And over on Facebook Live, you can watch the show. So that gives you a lot of options there, as well as you can go directly to Facebook and watch our show streaming over there live on the Winning at Life page. And in a few minutes, I'll share it over to my page at Gregory Ricks. Welcome to the show. Hey, James, how's it going? Let me give out that call number again for newbies. You know, we've been doing this show for 11 years, and I'm a financial advisor, money manager, founder of Gregory Ricks and Associates, a total wealth authority for those listening. And this is that show where you can get a little help, little guidance, direction, 504-260-0995.
I want to do just one thing to touch on before you hit the numbers, because this is the biggest number story of the day, arguably. And that's Tesla's earnings report that happened right after the bell. And it was good. It was real good. Tesla surpasses $1 billion in profit for the first time in a quarter. And okay, so I'm impressed. Billion in profit. So I did a little more digging here. You know, the numbers people were throwing around about the earnings report was not only is it doing better than it was last year, total revenue is a 98% year over year increase. Granted, 2020 was weird and it's not the best baseline to use, but that's what we got to work with. And so I was going through and looking at the list of the top publicly traded companies, just to see how far up the chain Tesla is. And it's the sixth most valuable publicly traded company in America. So just thought I'd throw that out the way before we do some numbers there.
Well, shares rose 2% after hours. Pretty good revenue numbers. About $800 million of their revenues came from solar energy. These power pack units, they don't share how many of those they've sold as well, something they keep close to the vest. They did report $23 million impairment related to the value of its Bitcoin holdings. Also, I thought that was kind of interesting. Their accounts payable, the amount of money Tesla owes suppliers and other service providers, rose by 13.7% from the previous quarter to $7.56 billion. They owe a little money out there.
Jeez. All right.
During the quarter, among other challenges, Tesla faced backlash from consumers in China, recalls in China and the U.S., delayed deliveries of high-performance version of its flagship sedan, the Model S Plaid. So they had some problems there on that. Couple other note, part shortages have been stubbornly persistent for Tesla and other automakers in its shareholder deck. Tesla said that it had delayed the launch of the semi-truck program until 2022. On the shareholder call, Musk said the biggest struggle this quarter was to procure enough modules that control the airbags and seat belts in Tesla vehicles. The lack of supply limited the company's production both in Fremont and Shanghai. I thought this was interesting on his call today. Musk said that many fans ask why Tesla doesn't just make its own chips to avoid shortages. He said that supply chain issues are something Tesla will solve with suppliers. Laughing that, and here's the quote from, "It's not like you can just whip up a chip fab."
Yes.
Well, you know, he has this bigger than life image, and like, oh, you've got shortage. Well, just you're the tech guy. You send rockets into space. You can't whip up some chips.
You can't get 2 trillion transistors in a little 1 square inch silicon wafer. Come on.
Yeah, because Tesla uses a lot of the same semiconductors and battery cells in cars as it does in energy storage products. Musk said the company has reduced its production at Powerwalls, and its Megapack battery systems for use at power stations are sold out, get this, until the end of next year. How about that?
What?
Well, but they've reduced production because they need the semiconductors. So okay. Basically, he said they're sold out till the end of next year. And Musk said he believes that there's probably demand for in excess of 1 million Powerwalls per year and an unspecified but vast amount of Megapacks for utilities given the push to transition to renewable energy. There was another note here. I'm skipping a lot of the coverage of this. He said is a Cybertruck probably will begin production in the Texas plant end of 2021. Those of you hanging around waiting for that weird looking truck, must emphasize it would be limited production at first and then ramping up to higher volume. But it's going to come after they get production up for the Model Y in Texas. And then he was also, this is another question I've been wondering about. Ask when Tesla will open its supercharger DC fast charging station to drivers of other non-Tesla vehicles. Musk and Drew Baglino, Senior Vice President of Powertrain and Energy Engineering, that's a mouthful, said the company's goal will be to expand its charging network enough that doing so will not result in longer waits for drivers to charge their vehicles on the road. So I think they're kind of protectionary of their clients. And Musk also took a moment to brace shareholders that he will gonna be disappointing, that you're going to have less quotes from him,
okay,
but that he will no longer default to speaking on, let alone leading Tesla earnings calls after this quarter. He did say he would speak at the annual shareholders meeting. Quite a lot from Tesla and Musk today.
Yeah, I think that might be a good thing for the company overall. He is notorious. They were griping about it on CNBC today. They threw it to, what's that guy's name? Gene. And they said, Gene, so you got the report on the Tesla earnings call that was supposed to happen at 5? And he's like, no, it got pushed back to 5:30. He's late again. He does this all the time. He postpones it. Now we got to weigh it on this flamboyant, eccentric billionaire. Whenever you're ready, you have all the people who are sitting here doing our jobs waiting to hear your report, rich guy. So that, I don't think a whole lot of the financial media is real upset about that.
Well, it could be, you know, his schedule's, he's pretty busy, you know, running Tesla and rocket ships. A lot to do out there.
All right. So Tesla is now, Gregory, the largest American corporation that's not worth $1 trillion. Facebook just passed that mark this month on the July 13th. We also have Alphabet, Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple in the $1 trillion club. And two of those corporations have passed $2 trillion, that being Apple and Microsoft. All right, all that done. Let's do the numbers. Or
S&P 500 reached another record high today ahead of a busy week of earnings reports from technology's heaviest hitters. The broad equity benchmark rose 0.2% to a record close of 4422.30, extending its winning streak to 5 days. It's feeling like getting out there and running. Mate, wonder if any correlation to the Olympics going on. Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 82.76 points or 0.2%. It didn't want to be left out, to an all-time high of 35,144.31. Also rising for a fifth straight day. Also, the tech-heavy NASDAQ composite closed slightly higher at 14,840.71. Yeah, hitting a new high as well. So it's one of the busiest weeks of earnings reports on deck, with Tesla, as we spoke of, kicking it off after the bell Last week, CEO Elon Musk said the automaker would likely start accepting Bitcoin for vehicle purchases again. Well, they did take a $23 million impairment on that in their earnings report. Big tech giants Apple, Alphabet, Microsoft are all set to report tomorrow. Google, Facebook, and Amazon will report later in the week.
Yeah, so we will know all about the fangs before the week's up, and we'll definitely tell you about them. I like that, though. There was an Olympic performance by all three of the markets today, making records.
Well, we have the Fed's meeting. Is that later this week, huh? Yeah, investors will be watching Federal Reserve's two-day policy meeting beginning tomorrow. The Fed Open Market Committee and the Board of Governors are expected to issue a statement on the stance of monetary policy Wednesday, midweek. On Thursday, the Commerce Department will report second quarter domestic data. Sales of new single family homes dropped unexpectedly in June, falling 6.6% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 676,000 units. Commerce Department said today, economists poll by the Dow Jones had expected new home sales to increase to 795,000 annually adjusted units in June. That is a pretty big miss, I'd say. Is it because of the expense that we had of 2x4s or new houses building? Is it because they weren't completed? James mentioned, well, maybe they can't afford them. It might be a combination of all of the above, but that was kind of surprising, and I'd call it a big miss so far on that number. Crude oil, $72.09. Brent crude, $73.89. Gold off a little bit today. We're at $1,797.30. Silver at $25.19. And a 10-year treasury yield off a little bit as well. We finished up at 1.283% yield.
All right. So last week, Joan and Diamondhead had called Gregory and thanked him because a while back, he had kind of given her some guidance because she was really upset about the incredibly low rate she was getting on CDs. So Gregory gave her some ideas and she called back to give us an update. And then Gregory actually, on Saturday's show, looked a few things up and sort of filled out the story a little bit. So this is pieced together from two recent shows in the last week. All right, can I sneak in one call? This is less than 2 minutes, and this was from the show that happened on Thursday. Joan in Diamondhead, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Joan?
Hi. I spoke with Gregory a little over 5 years ago, and I had CDs invested a substantial amount, and I was doing fine, everything paid for. Well, of course, you know, that ended. They matured. CD interest hit rock bottom. I've invested in annuities, and my money has grown. So I have more now than I had then.
Well,
and
awesome.
So I'm calling back and sorry I'm so many years late, but hello, better now than never.
Okay. Well, the annuities I like are fixed indexed annuities, and that's where you get the upside of the indices without any downside exposure. And with that said, I had a caller earlier, and she was looking at bank CDs, and you may have heard that might be the reason you called. She was looking at the bank CDs, and they're just not paying anything. And MIGAs do multi-year guarantee annuities, or call them CD annuities for short, do typically pay more than the bank CDs there. So
okay.
Great choices out there. Well, thanks for updating us on that, Joan.
All right, so we're back live now. That was from Thursday's show. And is this the rare case of someone who was being too safe and too conservative when they had a better option that was zero risk for more return, right?
Yeah, you could define it that way. But look, here's the thing. Options are narrow for those that want zero risk. So guaranteed interest rate for a period of time is kind of where they land on that. And I was just pulling up some random rates, and let me go here over to some MIGA rates. And like various insurance companies, and basically MIGA rates, multi-year guaranteed annuities, so it's kind of like CD annuities, I define it as. And you know, I'm seeing 2.25, 2.25, 2.3, low of 2.1 on 3-year. I always kind of say the sweet spot, like 4-year goes to 2.6, 2.4, 2.3, 5. Now on 5-year, you're getting at 3.3, 2.95. So when you go out a little bit further, you get a nice bump up there. And what we were talking about early in this hour is interest rates are probably going down. So we don't have any hope for more interest rates for a while. You know, and at the end, and after I said that the other day, I realized I said going down. In the short term, interest rates may well move down in the short term. We think later in 22 and 23, being 2023, yes, we are feeling interest rates are going in the upside. So when you look at our yields, and I was looking up Alley the other day, and when in comparison to the rates I just kind of gave you on what I saw MIGA rates were, 3-year rate, 0.65% over on Alley. This is at Alley.com, you know, the online bank. Their 5-year rates, 0.8%. Gosh, that's quite a bit different to seeing MIGAs in the range of what did I give, around 3%? Mm-hmm. Yeah, more than 3 times the bank yield.
Yeah, and it's always nice when the people remember to call back and thank you, because you've given advice to 1,000 callers over the decade. And how many have called back to thank you? Maybe like 20, 30.
Oh, we help so many people. That's why all of them are here listening as well and sharing and telling their friends.
All right. Our restaurant of the week is actually the bar, Bud Rips. It's one of the oldest bars in the Bywater. And that's saying a lot, because the Bywater has a lot of old bars in it. But it's a classic New Orleans bar, neighborhood bar in a classic New Orleans neighborhood. Bud Rips in the Bywater. They were they had to shut completely down for months, and they're just now getting back started. So if you're just looking for like an out-of-the-way place where there's no tourists and there's not a Metairie cover band playing Don't Stop Believing in the corner for the 1,000th time, just keep that in mind. Bud Rips in the Bywater.
I thought this was really interesting in news today. Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos offered to cover multiple billions of dollars of NASA costs in exchange for a contract to build a lunar lander to land astronauts on the moon. Bezos said Blue Origin would waive all payments up to $2 billion from the National Aeronautics and Space Administration in the current and next two government fiscal years. Blue Origin would also fund its own Pathfinder mission to low Earth orbit, according to Bezos. In return, the company requested a fixed price contract from the government agency. See, back in April, they awarded SpaceX, Elon Musk's company, with a sole $2.89 billion contract to build the next crewed lunar lander under its Human Landing Systems program. So they did have a 10-month study contracts were given to SpaceX, Blue Origin, and Dynetics to begin work on lunar landers. You remember the old NASA where they ran and did everything. They're going to send you up in the Apollo rocket, space shuttles. And how did the bidding go? To the lowest bidder is going to put you in those thin metalled crafts to go up into space where if you're out of oxygen, you have a problem. And Bezos says, well, and this is more, what is he worth? $180 billion?
Yeah, right at $200 billion.
So he says, well, heck. And free doesn't sound good, but basically it's a $2.89 billion contract. And he's saying, yeah, if you give it to my company, we'll waive the first $2 billion. Talk about low bidder. I just don't know if I want to go up there and to the moon and land on the moon in the lowest bidder thing. Even though it may be not, because he has all this money. This is more, I want to do it so bad, I'll front it.
And look, what are you telling me he cashes in Amazon stock every year? $1 billion or $2 billion?
Oh, it's more like $4 billion a year. I think he did as much as $7 billion last year.
So he can swing it. He actually has the liquid assets.
Oh yeah, he could swing it. He's already putting a lot into it. He just, you know what? I didn't know know he was this competitive because he hadn't bought a football team. He hadn't bought a team in every sport yet because he could just from one of his years of cashing stock. He could. Think about it.
Couldn't he buy like every football team at the same time?
Well, he could, but then the Amazon Football League, everybody would quit watching then. But with that said, he could buy basketball, football, hockey, what other? Soccer.
Wow, you skipped baseball, soccer. Huh?
Oh, yeah, baseball. And so he could do that. He could do all that. I wasn't leaving baseball out. I'm just...
He's a different kind of competitive, though. He's competitive about going to the moon.
He's competitive business.
Not getting a ball business. In the end zone or something
business
like that.
Business-wise. So that was an interesting take on
that. I like that. It's a great deal for the taxpayers. You're not going to hear me complain about that very much at all. All right. Let me do the shorter call here. Will we finish with that? All right. Now you're going to hear an assist. This was from Saturday's show, and we had Dwayne Stein of Mortgage Gumbo in with us for the hour. And this was a call that came in right after 11 o'clock.
Tina and Abita Springs.
Before we take Tina, she's got a refi question here, and I want to put this stat out there. 27% of households with an outstanding mortgage on their primary residence have applied to refinance their mortgage within the last year as of June 2021. So we know a little bit about your business, Dwayne.
Yeah.
One out of four people with a mortgage are refinanced.
All right, now Tina in Abita Springs. Go.
Hi, guys. I am calling because I'm on the fence. I already been approved to get to refi, but I'm not sure if I wanted to do it. I'd be going from 25 years to a 15-year, and my note would wind up going up about $300. And with COVID and everything, so they say, I'm kind of on the fence if I should definitely go through with it or not.
Yep. So here's what I would tell you, Tina, and what you have to look at is, and I talked about this a couple weeks ago on Mortgage Gumbo, be careful with, and I affectionately call them Smuckatellis, folks who just want to sell you on a 15-year term. There's a lot more data that I would gain from you because there's a way to still pay it off in 15 years, but have a lower payment or even maybe where you're at now. So that's what I would run through with you and go through the check boxes with you on versus just going, there's a lot of order takers out there and you see that number on a piece of paper, Tina, right? And you go, I want some of that low rate. Unfortunately, some of that low rate, when you go through the drive-through or you go buy bread and milk, you don't get to walk through and go, hey, check out my 2.5%. I'm out of here, right? So that's something where I would encourage you, reach out to me. Let's chat before you sign anything. Let me do a free second look for you and see exactly what you're doing. And I'll tell you, if I say, yeah, good deal, then roll with it. If not, then it'll give you something. I want you to know what your options are before you just go signing something.
All right, Tina?
Well, because I'm at 3.25% already.
Yep.
So it's not a whole point to do
that. It doesn't matter. That's another farce, too. So reach out to me, Tina. Let's chat. Don't make that decision without us chatting.
What number?
Go to snapsendandsave.com. Snapsendandsave.com.
So you notice I left the stat in at the beginning of that call. Let me just replay that little part right there.
Tina and Abita Springs.
Before we take Tina, she's got a refi question here, and I want to put this stat out there. 27% of households with an outstanding mortgage on their primary residence have applied to refinance their mortgage within the last year.
All right, so that was from the beginning of the call, and I left that in because I wanted to remember to talk about that afterwards.
Well, it was kind of telling when I told Dwayne, we know a good bit about your business just from that stat right there. And there is so much refi going on. And that's one of the things we talked to him about is this environment is we've got some low interest rates for a little while. It's just like, and it seems like every time we get to this point, it's kind of like, get you some now. This isn't going to last. And then a year later, it goes back down to that rate again. So we've been in this low interest rate environment for over a decade, and we even keep saying, and you've heard me say earlier in the show, in later 2022, 2023, we're expecting interest rates to move up. Maybe they will. How much? Maybe not much. And then come back. When you think about it, really?
Well, even if it goes into the fours, You know, that's not a barn-burning rate that's going to crush your ability to buy a house.
No, I don't think so. And still, that's low interest rate in the grand scheme of things out there. And it's got to go up a ways to get to 4.
Am I supposed to be doing a refi 29% or was it 27% of people in the last 12-month period? At least.
Well, what's your interest rate?
3.875.
See, it's beautiful. You could lower interest. You could get lower interest rate.
Maybe.
Dwayne would probably say, yeah, you need to get a lower. He would probably tell me the same thing. Gregory, you need to get a interest rate reduction. And I think it does play into how long you're going to be there because there are costs. This isn't like free refinancing. So ultimately, you've got to factor in the cost of that free refinance versus how long you're going to be in that property, which probably would tell me, yeah, Gregory, you should go refinance. You're going to be there a while because I don't plan on going anywhere, but that's kind of the point.
Yeah, you know,
it's part of that.
I'd asked him about that about, I don't know, maybe a year ago or so, and he was pointing out to me on your amortization table that once you get far enough in your mortgage, I'm almost a decade into my mortgage, plus I've paid a little bit, so I'm a little further down the principal train than I'm supposed to be. And that amount of your payment that's interest versus principal has already squeezed kind of accordioned out enough that I'm really not going to save a whole lot if I go from 3.875 to like a 3.25, because then I would reset my payments and a bigger chunk of that payment every month would be interest. So yeah, I would save some money, but not as much as if I'd done it on a younger loan or with a higher rate.
Yeah, and it's the amount of interest on the payment over time that's consideration of that. Where you're on that back end, it's not as much of an impact there. So once again, you should consider the fees or refinance price compared to what the interest is over time. Something to think about. Just don't go out there and do it just because you can save a 0.5%.
Hey, Cheryl in New Orleans. You're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Cheryl?
A question. We own our home that we live in, not outright. You know, we have a mortgage on it still, but the house that we moved from, we continued to rent that house out. So we have renters in it and it pays the mortgage. So it's a good, clear, you know, monthly, like they're paying off the mortgage. It went up probably $300,000. So a lot of people in our neighborhood are selling those houses right now to get the money out. But my husband wants to keep it as a long-term investment. Would you sell or would you keep it?
If you sell, what are you going to do?
That's the thing. And we lose so much. I think it's, 30% in the sale for taxes that we would lose right away.
Well, you'll have a capital gain tax on that. So, yeah, you're gonna pay some taxes. But are you looking to replace that revenue, that income property? And you do have a mortgage on it, right?
Correct.
And it will get paid off. Yeah. And when do you project it to be paid off?
We have 13 years left on the loan.
What's your husband's age?
He's 55.
Okay, so is that going to be part of your retirement plan, the income production from that?
Correct, because we both work freelance and film, so we don't have like 401ks or like stuff for a business or anything. So it's kind of just been this like investment we just forget about, you know, okay, that we could sell like maybe when he retires. But everybody's like freaking out, like, oh, you should sell now. You should sell now. It's so high. It's crazy. You're going to make so much money.
So your Schedule C, is that the form you use on your 1040s, your tax returns?
Right.
Okay. Selling a property for a gain, taking this opportunity, folks in that neighborhood are doing so. I come back to this question of what are you going to do on the other side of that? And here's one thing about it, Cheryl. This is kind of like, this isn't like, you know, this stock is way up and like, oh my gosh, should I take the profit off of it now?
Right.
And you might could sell some of that stock and take some of that increased risk off the table. But rental properties, we're talking about real estate as of this past April, year over year, up 15% across the country. And over the past 20 years, it's averaged an increase of 4% a year. I don't think we're going, this property is not the stock market. You have to look at the area where it's at. How do you think that's going to be? Ultimately, I think what we're getting to is this is an income source that's going to be free and clear roughly at retirement time, another source of income. But getting back to this property's not going to tank. Everything being equal, it's not going to all of a sudden you lose your value and like, gosh, we missed that window And if anything, your rental is going to be, will be higher in the future, that rental income. Thoughts or questions?
Correct. So, yeah, you would keep it then. You probably wouldn't sell it. I was sort of leaning towards that, too, because the rent did go up. And now, at this point, when we sign a new lease, we would have actually passive income since it's gone up so much.
Yes. I'm on board for keeping it.
That
yeah.
You would.
I'm for keeping
then
it.
Then if we sold it, we were going to have to do like that 1031 exchange where then you take that money and put it into a vacation rental. But then it's like, well, then we're just starting over on a brand new loan when this one only has 13 years left.
And you're going to be paying more for whatever you go into because there's not like you're the only deal in town neighborhood that it's risen across the country. It's that way everywhere. And my guess is what you're wanting is probably not coming at a discount. You got to go look at where's a town in the country that manufacturing's moving out so it gets depressed and I can buy into cheaply. That's not what you want to
do right
there. And we're about income source.
And do you think it would be a good idea? Then what do you think if we kept the house and we took out $100,000 of the equity? Because we're now probably $300,000 over in equity. If we took out $100,000 and used that to put down onto something else, do you think that would be smarter since the rates are so low?
I'm not going to get into the borrowing part of investing, and this sounds like you doing that to a real estate site, and this kind of needs to be your jam there. My thoughts on rental property, if you're getting into the rental business and all you have is one, is you have a problem. But when you have like 10, you have a business. Because someday when you get to be 80 years old, who's fixing the water heater, the toilet, you know, those things. I'm thinking more of if this is something you want to perpetuate it into a business to where the handyman can be hired instead of you and your husband handling that as well. That's how I think of real estate. And just be careful. Leveraging, it is cheap. Just once again, you have to make good decisions there and it kind of be your thing. And once again, we're not finding discounts anywhere and you have competition out there for other properties because we talked about in last hour, equity firms with billions of dollars are buying houses across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So you have competition for those properties. But, and I'm not raining on that. I think that for some people, that's really a good thing. For me personally, it wouldn't be my jam. Because my belief system is, if I do it, I've got to figure out how to get to 10. And then knowing me, if I get to 10, then I'm going to, I need 10 more. I need not go there. It's not my thing.
But if it's one situation, you would say, don't sell it. Just hold on to it.
Yes. I'm a fan of keeping it since it all works well for you. If it's a problem property and then you're like, oh my God, I want out of this. Because we've had callers about that and they're in a situation now, I'm back at profit. It was depressed. Now I've got prices gone up. Now I can get out and it makes their life better and they don't have to deal with it. Your situation is you sound really happy with it and where it's going and it becoming an income source. And if you do later decide to sell it, I believe it's going to be worth more 5 years from now.
Really? Yeah. Everyone keeps saying the market's going to crash and tank and you're going to be stuck with this house. I'm like, I don't feel stuck with it. It's a great income and it covers the mortgage and it rents consistently. It never is empty.
Our country is short 4 million homes. We cannot catch up. So prices are going up.
Right.
That's where we're at as a country. We need more homes and they're just not springing up. It costs more to build, and that's going to show up in prices in real estate. That's not showing up yet either. I think if you buy now, I still think it's going to be worth more because it's costing more to build, and these price increases, and building is stopped, and because they're like, oh, is it going to come back? I don't think, once again, I'm not on the transitory train. I think inflation is here, and we're having inflation because we've had low inflation the past decade, so the Fed says, and really we have. Well, it's catching up now, and there's a new pricing going forward for everything. That's what I think. I think you're good. But you and your husband talk about it, think it through, and hopefully this helps you come to a decision that y'all are happy with.
Yeah, no, this sounds perfect. We just needed somebody on the outside to kind of tell us, because we're not super great with business. We're just really good at working, but we're like, wait, we don't want to lose like our little nest egg here. What should we do with it, you know?
Yeah, it's nice to pop up and have some pretty good value, and I think it's going to continue for you.
Anything else, Cheryl?
Yeah. No, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Isn't she nice? Cheryl was so bubbly, energetic. Classic story, though. When do you know to sell that second home? We've been getting a few of those questions as of late, because exactly what we were talking about in the last segment, you know, hot and heavy housing market and low interest rates and like a lot of people trying to score.
Yeah, you know, hers was a great story and it could go either way. But when they're talking about creating multiple streams of income for retirement and they feel short, this is justifiable. Like, why would you sell? You know, and I did my Raptor come up in this replay? I didn't hear that part.
I cut that part out.
Okay. Well, it goes the same thing. I mentioned, well, heck. And this discussion came up with a friend the other night. We're just talking about how vehicles cost now 45% more used vehicles. And I thought about it. I said, well, heck, I could sell my Raptor for more than I paid for it. And he was telling me about a story about a guy that sold his F-150 more than he paid for it.
What?
But the new Ford, they wouldn't give him a discount on it. He had to pay sticker price. And the point was made once again, well, if you sell it, what are you going to get? So where are they going to replace that income stream from there? But a neat thing, we had a caller a few months ago, real quick here, is he was upside down until recently and enabled him to finally get from under that property. So there's always so many different angles to look at this.
A week from tomorrow is the Wine, Wisdom, and Food Experience happening at Keith Young's. I think there's a scant like 4 reservations left for that one. There's another one August 5th. Same place, Wine, Wisdom, and Food at Keith Young. There's excellent food, excellent wine, and excellent financial wisdom to be had there. You can register 504-832-9200 or go to gregoryricks.com. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is an independent financial services firm that utilizes a variety of investment and insurance products. Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. Neither AE Wealth Management nor advisors providing investment advisory services through AE Wealth Management recommend or facilitate the buying or selling of cryptocurrencies. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.